For Notre Dame football fans, there's no sweeter sound than the words,
"Touchdown Notre Dame!"
or "Irish win."
He's in for a touchdown! The Irish have come from behind!
As a fan of the Fighting Irish, you know that Saturdays in the fall are not just game days. They are unforgettable experiences. Welcome to a fan's perspective on Fighting Irish football. This is Dome and Domer. Here are your hosts, Mike Brammer and Ed Jordanic.
Hello, Irish fans, and welcome to another edition of Dome and Domer. My name is Mike Brammer, joining me, Ed Jordanic. And for the next 15 minutes or so, we're going to review the 2012 class of the Fighting Irish. Ed, I think that, every single year we get to this point, everybody always overanalyzes where you fall in the positioning of rankings of classes. And people tend to forget that what it's really all about is probably number one, did you get the guys you wanted? You know, did, based on your profiling of athletes, did you get those guys you wanted? And then two, and I mean right behind it, right next to it, is did you get the positions you needed? You know, did Notre Dame just go sign three stud defensive linemen? Is that a smart thing to do? I think people forget all those points. But, we might as well jump on the hot topic of the day, which is the AKA CJ Leak, I don't know what you call that, but anyways, Deontay Berry just saying sorry, guys, at the very last second, yeah. And nobody knew it. How much damage do you really think that does in the long scheme?
I don't know how much. I think it's just kind of a, I think a lot of people sort of felt something like this was going to happen just because the overall momentum and vibe of the program was not the greatest. We got a little pickup with the Gunnar Kiel flip, but the fact of the matter is that the team didn't perform well on the field in their big chances this year, and that translated, I think, into some recruiting momentum that was lost. I think that Brian Kelly thought this was a 10-2 team, regardless of who was playing quarterback. I think he went out and recruited like it was going to be a 10-2 team, recruited like it was going to be a BCS team, and then they didn't deliver. And every time that they had the bright lights and the big stage, and also every time they played a team that they were going to go head-to-head with some really good players, because let's face it, our benchmark, at least at this point, is not LSU, Alabama. Whether it's in terms of recruiting or in terms of play, it really is Michigan, Stanford, USC, and maybe to a lesser extent somebody like a Florida State. But it's really those traditional rivals, and they're also good academic schools. And I don't think right now there's anybody that that we wouldn't accept that could also get into USC or Michigan or Stanford for sure. So when we came up lame in those games against those teams, I think that hurt. And there's probably no concrete evidence of that. But whereas last year you had good momentum and a good bowl win, and that translated into kind of like an overall good vibe and we're on the rise and all that kind of feeling, and that translated into Eshock and Stephon Tuitt and Aaron Lynch and Troy Nicholas all in the last month of recruiting. This year you kind of started out with a bang because the expectations were high, and you had Greenberry and T. Shepard and Ronald Darby, and then you finished with a whimper, and you lost Taylor Decker, and you lost Deontay Greenberry, and you lost Ronald Darby, and you didn't have a chance to flip Brian Poole, and which is also discouraging because it's not like Florida had a good year. I mean, who knows where the Florida football program is going? Right. They had a lousy year, and they still have to show that they can get back into the upper echelon. So,
yeah, no, you're right. It was surprising. I mean, I think it's fair to say that we kind of survived.
I agree. That's a good word. Yeah, that's a good way to describe it.
I would also say that, hey, man, that's not too bad to survive and still finish in the top 10. And
well, after the Greenberry, I think, I think it's a stretch. When you only get 16 guys,
it's a stretch to get in there. But clearly, I think we survived. I think that going into next year, there's no doubt about it that we have the pieces in place. I don't think next year there's going to be any excuses. When you look at where we're at today with this program, where it's headed, what kind of talent we have on the field, I'm going to flat out say anything less than 10 or 9 wins is going to be disastrous.
Well, the problem is that Brian Kelly, I think, has kind of put himself in a position now where he has to do that. I mean, not has to do that, but you know what I mean? Like the pressure is ramped up because he didn't have the 10-win BCS season this season, which I think he thought he was going to have. So now he has a little less political capital to spend. You know, there, you could make an argument that there were certain things that happened during the year that demonstrated that he was feeling the pressure a little bit. And I think even towards the end of this recruiting class, you could kind of see that, because I think that they really thought they had some guys locked up, especially in the defensive back situation. And then at the end, they're just kind of flailing around. You know, like, there's no way that Yuri Wright, with the kind of stuff that he did on Twitter, is a candidate to come to Notre Dame. There's no way that, you know, the Standifer, who could, you know, who Michigan knocked out of the box for academics, you know, and didn't have this foreign language. I mean, these kids, to me, those were kind of acts of desperation, and they don't ring true with a coach who says, well, we kind of shop in a different aisle and we're looking for the right kind of guys. At the end there, they were just trying to get a 6'1", 190 body to play cornerback, because they didn't have, you know, they didn't check those boxes in this recruiting class. And so those were Hail Mary passes. Yeah. And, you know, that's not the sign of kind of a, you know, kind of like a, like a well, like you said, kind of like a well coordinated, kind of like well kind of thought out kind of recruiting situation.
Right,
And that's what's a little bit, you know, that's why people are a little bit on edge heading into this next year, because I think the pressure has been ratcheted up to perform on the field. Whereas if they would have gone 10-2 and gone to a BCS game right now, we'd be saying, whoa, next year's schedule is real tough. You know, like if we could win 10 games next year,
right,
you know, that's
exactly,
pretty good. And it's 2013, right, that's the national championship, you know, run or something. You know, that's the kind of narrative we'd be spinning right now.
Right. Well, I think it's safe to say it's still that. It's still that, and that you can't expect a national championship next year. I don't think, obviously anything's possible, but if you just look in the grand scheme of things, you'd say, okay, no matter what, who's taking snaps next year? And I'm just going on what my guesstimate's going to be. I can't see it being Tommy Reese, but he may surprise everybody. Who knows? The point is that I'm not sure we have the pieces in place to make that run for the national championship. I do think that the talent is there. I don't think there's any chance for excuses for Brian Kelly to say, like, look, we just haven't gotten it on the recruiting front to get the kind of talent in here in order to win and compete with the schedule that Notre Dame plays. I don't think that argument.
Well, the vast majority of guys that, you know, play next year are going to be quote unquote his guys. You know?
Yeah, so, exactly. So, right. And plus he's got some guys coming back that maybe we thought we weren't going to have in Tail,
right,
and, you know, Eifert. So I find it hard to believe that's, I don't think that's going to transpire. I'm sitting here today feeling very good. Yes, I will flat out admit, I think we survived this recruiting cycle. However, I think in light of everything, they did fairly well.
No, there's
I'm
really
fairly happy.
Yeah,
I'm not upset.
The issue really is that, you know, for consistent excellence, you do have to kind of hit your marks in terms of those positions that you're talking about. And now, you know, now there's just more pressure on, you know, that you really hit it right with a couple of these guys,
like
Justin Ferguson, and Chris Brown, or like T. Shepard, or like, I mean, T. Shepard may well be the best defensive back in the country, but we don't know. I mean, you know, recruit in the country, but we don't know at
you
this point.
Know.
I mean,
yeah,
you know, you don't know.
No.
And the thing is that if you get three or four of those guys, two are going to pan out. If you get three or four of those receivers or five of those receivers, two are going to pan out. But now you only got two receivers, basically, you know, outside the lines receivers. And, you know, that means that, hopefully, you know, they're really good, because otherwise you're a year behind in the cycle. And then you've got, you know, you got to go out and get a top notch receiver next year, or a top notch deep back next year, and throw them into the mix right away as a freshman. So it's all part of that program development stuff that maybe took a half step back. Whereas last year, you know, at this time we were blown away because we did so well getting those kind of big, you know, those big athletic type bodies for both sides of the line, that really set us up well for the next several years. And I think that you and I would both agree that, you know, if it came down to it, you know, it's that's where Notre Dame's real you know, problem areas were, you know, on in the trenches and in the front seven on defense. Right. So I think that's why you're saying the expectations for performance on the field next season should still be pretty high.
Right. Absolutely should be. So, in any event, I do think that, and I know we had this, this is one interesting point I did want to bring up because I find it, it just fascinated me, but in the recruits that he brought to the USA game, we were 1-for-12. And, you know, you put all that effort. I know we had some email exchanges going back between you and me and some others that we typically fight about Notre Dame football with. But, you know, I'm not buying that he wasn't in on a lot of that stuff and put a lot of effort
into. I'm with you 100%. Yeah, totally.
This, I mean, and so I think this has got to rock him a little bit in that, all right, wait a minute. I put together this big, huge weekend. And I think that what he now realizes is, you know what, those things don't matter as much as what happens in the interviews that are face to face. And then, you know, that whole game day atmosphere, college football is the same everywhere. I mean, there's obviously some differences there. There's some neat things Notre Dame does, but the real closing of these athletes isn't on a Saturday where they're hanging around with 50 different people and getting introduced to 50 different NFL former players and all that kind of stuff. You know,
well,
in
it's
the
also
end,
you want to be. I mean, you know, you want guys that are winners, and you want them that you know that you want guys that think they're going to get coached up, and that they're going to be part of a winning program. And so, and Brian Kelly said it in his press conference, you know, the other day after National Signing Day. I mean, it comes down to wins, and everything was just about perfect about that USC weekend. Besides, you know, what happened starting at 7:30 at night because they came out flat. They didn't play well. They put themselves in a hole. And then when they had a key chance, a key moment in the game to swing the momentum and, they did not execute. So, and you know, that happened against Michigan. That happened against South Florida. That happened to a lesser degree. Then that definitely happened against Florida State. I mean, you can make an argument that, Stanford was the only team that was really clearly better, on the field in 2011, in Notre Dame's football season. I mean, and listen, he knows that more than anybody else. The problem is I think that, you know, after 20 years as a head football coach, he's got a pretty good kind of feel for his team and what they are capable of, et cetera, et cetera. And I think he's still incredibly frustrated and just kind of blown away when he looks back and says, how the hell did we go 8-5 with this group? How did that happen? And, he's making some changes on the staff, you know, based on that. But you're right. It was just a grinding battle to the finish in this recruiting year. And I think the number one reason is because it was just a definitely, disappointing, year on the field. And
It was. And that translates. And, you know, I will say this. I mean, I think that, you know, the Deontay Berry loss, it's stranger even from the standpoint that he ends up at Houston. You know, I guess it could have been a lot more palatable had he gone somewhere that made sense.
Well, I'm glad he didn't go to Michigan or somebody on our schedule. I mean, I've got, you know.
Yeah, when I grow, I'm just, it's just strange. But, you know, he's an 18-year-old kid, and I mean, I think that there's a lot of pressure going on. This is by far a more difficult decision in a kid's life. And I think way too many parents today leave that decision up to the kid. And I think that's
And the bottom line, you know, and frankly, I mean, a lot of these kids don't have parents that are involved in this decision. You know, they don't. They're from difficult family situations. Maybe they have a guardian, you know, maybe they have a coach. You know, I don't know the particulars about Deontay Greenberry. Anybody who's jumping all over his case, I think is just crazy.
No,
you know,
it's not fair.
The thing is that, I think a lot of this is these guys, because there's all these top 150, top 200, recruits. What sometimes people forget is by the time we get to this point, a lot of them know each other really well, even if they're on opposite sides of the country. And, you know, they're competitors and, you know, they want to chart their own course. I thought during the whole process, I was like, man, you know, Deontay Greenberry, first of all, he had a great senior season. He was the California Player of the Year. His cousin didn't even play. you know, he was ineligible. And the whole thing was, well, he's going to go where his cousin goes, as though T. Shepard was the straw that stirs the drink. And Deontay Greenberry was like the little brother who was just as though like T. Shepard was Manti Te'o and Deontay Greenberry was Robbie Toma. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it was strange. So, I agree. It was strange.
And so for him to kind of, you know, kind of say, listen, I want to do my own thing. I mean, I think I get that. What I don't get is, you, as a staff, you know, the selling him not just on Notre Dame, and maybe he wasn't the right fit, you know, but selling him on the fact that, you know, there was, you know, the exposure that he'll get and the fact that he would have been given a chance right away to start in, you know, basically Michael Floyd's position, you know, and basically have two or three really good accomplished quarterbacks coming to a program that was more or less stable compared to Houston, which just lost their All-American quarterback and their coach, right? You know, it's really strange to me that, and you wonder if maybe, you know, his commitment was taken for granted or he was kind of looked at as a package with T. Shepard and wasn't given enough individual stroking. I mean, you know, who knows? But those are going to happen. I mean, last year, all those kind of swung our way. And, you know, this year they didn't. Right.
Yeah, I mean, it's part of the recruiting cycle. I know we all put up with that, and I you know, it stinks because it was such a big void for us. I mean, it was just an obvious, what a perfect fit for this kid to walk in.
Anybody who wonders about this stuff, Mike, should go online and read this kind of day-by-day, blow-by-blow, phone-call-by-phone-call account of the recruitment of this Doriel Green Beckham, the number one player in the class who chose Missouri. And I can't remember who it was sent around last night. I can't remember the name of the writer, but it was all about the family and the recruitment of it. And parts of it just make you want to throw up in terms of what recruiting has become. You know, I mean, it is just and parts of it, you're just like, this is a kid, you know, and the pressure that they're under and all the stuff going on. But the disappointing part of the article is that, you know, Brian Kelly is mentioned in it, and basically, Notre Dame wasn't ever seriously in contention, but they were definitely crossed off the list when this kid's mom saw Brian Kelly throw his headset down at the end of a game instead of handing it to his assistant.
that's well, you know what? Maybe it's a good thing he didn't come to Notre Dame.
I mean, and you know, part of me is sad. Like, yeah, are you kidding me? This is football, you know. And if this mom has this kind of influence, where, you know, she thinks this kid is, you know, going, you know, to play patty cake, and, you know, but another part of me is like, that just goes to show you kind of the types of kids that we're dealing with today. I mean, you cannot call them out in public. You know, you cannot kind of come across as a jerk. I mean, maybe you can ream them out at practice when nobody's there and nobody's watching and their parents aren't there. But I mean, these kids are coddled from day one. And it is just, you know, you have to really just be an incredible salesperson to get some of these kids to consider your school. I mean, it is just unbelievable. And I don't know, maybe, you know, look at what's going on right now with Urban Meyer and, you know, the Big Ten coaches, you know, tattletaling on him and some of his methods and saying, we don't want to be like the SEC. I mean, college football recruiting, you know, we know basketball is a cesspool, and it sounds like college football isn't too far behind.
Yeah, it's definitely getting there, and it's unfortunate. So, you know, I think ultimately at the end of the day, I mean, we all realize we're dealing with kids here. And, you know, these are kids that are coming to play football for their school, you know. They're not being paid to play football. They're just coming here to play football for their school. Unfortunately, it does drive a lot of revenue. And so, you know, this is the kind
of. And unfortunately, a lot of them are seen as, you know, long-term meal tickets for their families or their guardians or whoever they're, you know, supporting back home.
Yep. And it's unfortunate. And it's all about that. And I think that, you know, the world has changed on us. It's certainly not. I don't think Bobby Knight could start his career right now today and survive it.
Yeah.
I don't think he gets very far. And it's just the way that the world is now. And, you know, so be it. Yeah. One last point I did want to bring up, and I'm curious because you weren't on the last show that Coffee and I did, where I'm proclaiming already that Golson's going to start next year. But, you know, with the acquiring of Gunnar Kiel, I mean, obviously, no doubt about it, you always grab quarterbacks whenever you can. I don't care if we've got a
stud
lined up. I mean, I think it was an absolutely great catch for us. But I think in light of everything, I mean, how do you stack up going into next season?
I think what's more kind of interesting to me is, you know, putting Chuck Martin in charge of the offense and, you know, Tony Alford, the back to the running backs and slot receivers. And so I just think that, you know, it comes down to execution. And Brian Kelly's history is, you know, having basically, you know, kind of two or three quarterbacks that are ready and basically become interchangeable parts. So I would be pretty surprised if, like you, if Tommy Rees is a starting quarterback. And I just think that they need a little bit more kind of, you know, excitement out of that position. But I will say this, based on their offensive line hire, based on Chuck Martin getting the offensive coordinator job, I think we're going to try and pound people a lot more than we think next year. I think that they're going to, that Tommy Rees does have a chance maybe to play a little bit more than we think, just because I think they're going to have more of a kind of a ball control type offense maybe than we think. And, you know, they're going to try and be a mistake free, you know, kind of consistent kind of move the chains offense, because they're not going to have a Michael Floyd, you know, and Tyler Eifert's a playmaker, but, you know, he's not kind of a, you know, he's not a super deep, you know, wide out threat. Tyler Jones is a possession receiver. John Goodman is a possession receiver. Robbie Toma is a possession receiver. You know, Theo Riddick, we're not sure what we've got there. So I think it's more of kind of an offensive philosophy. We're going to see that they're going to really try and develop an offensive line that just knocks people off the ball and can play ball control. And so I would probably say that if Golson is the guy, what they're really going to emphasize is ball security, possession, you know, move the chains, and maybe, you know, a big play here or there down the middle of the field to Eifert. You know, unless somebody really steps up, unless, you know, a DeVaris Daniels really steps up, or one of these freshman receivers really step up, or they've got some threats that, you know, we're not quite kind of cognizant of right now. But I don't, to tell you the truth, I don't really care.
But I do think you're right. I mean, I think you're hitting it right on the head, and which is going to be my argument as to why it's Golson. Because I think what will happen is, I don't see Golson throwing it for 300 yards every single game. But what I do see him doing is throwing it like 15 times, but then get 240 yards, because they're going to be long plays. I can't imagine if what I'm hearing is true, and he is that athletic of a kid, then you've got a threat. And like you say, if you can pound the football and have that threat of four times a game, him pulling and going around end for 15, 20 yards, I mean, those are huge plays that, if you look at our season and what we did, oftentimes we were going backwards in an 80-yard drive. I mean, how many times did we look at second and four and we had a penalty or a, you know, a,
well, your analysis makes perfect sense, because basically you lost a big playmaker, right, in Floyd, on offense. And so now, you know, since you can't necessarily, or you have unknowns in terms of replacing that, and you're not going to replace that one for one, you've got to put another playmaker on the field somehow. And the place where you've got somebody is definitely, Golson. You know, he's obviously somebody that can move the chains with his feet, and is by all accounts a pretty polished thrower, and a threat to make a big play, right?
I think in those situations where you are pounding the football, you're gonna get those one-on-one coverages where it's not as difficult for him to run the offense when he doesn't have to make huge reads every single time he's dropping back as a sophomore. So I think that, I agree. I think all the pieces just seem to point to this. Martin coming over to the offense, comments that he's making about, hey, don't be surprised if we pound it. Having a guy like Golson back there that has the kind of arm that can pull the trigger in a big situation one-on-one and drop it in there. And the threat that he's not exactly a possession passer.
Yeah. I mean, and also that he's somebody that I think really emphasize, you know, not making the mistake. And you will see him, you know, tuck it in and, you know, take off for 6 to 16 yards. And they're going to be fairly comfortable with that for a while in exchange for perhaps throwing into coverage. Right. So, and you don't have that with Rees. I like Hendricks' game. He kind of, unfortunately, is kind of this guy in the middle, you know, and he and Keel are kind of like the guys in the middle, that have a little bit of both, and you just kind of wonder, kind of where they'll end up. But it would not shock me, and I I hate to say this, but it would not shock me if all four of those guys see the field sometime during the 2012 season.
Yeah. Could very well happen. Yeah, you're right. Could happen. Yep. All right, well, we'll leave it there. You've been listening to Dome and Domer, an online conversation about Notre Dame sports from a fan's perspective. For Ed Jordanic, I'm Mike Brammer. Thanks for listening.